Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the October 14th Board of Education meeting, which will now come to order. We all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Ms. Wilkinson?
Here.
Excuse me. Mr. Alger? Mr. Wilkinson?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis? Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here. Okay, public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Just a reminder, this will be your only time to participate for those of you that are joining us and are not familiar with our new process. Anybody like to speak? Mrs. Stecker.
Stephanie Clark.
Mrs. Clark, welcome.
I'm not really sure what's going to be discussed during the discussion of public participation protocol this evening. I'm hoping you're seriously reconsidering our remediation of public participation and if we need the next discussion item. But since I don't know what we will be discussing, I have to comment now versus having a discussion which would be the last call. So I just have a few thoughts. First, I don't think any of us that attend the yearly meetings would argue that we'll be more effective meeting time marking agenda items if actually community members' questions to be answered later. Where I'm struggling is with Mr. Elger's approved proposal to eliminate public participation except at the beginning of the meetings. As has been said before, in light of our departure from IAFP standards when it comes to fundamental agencies, I find it ironic that we are now going to defer to IAFP as to how we should conduct effective business meetings. And I'm not so sure that the recommendation to eliminate public participation came from IAFP. As far as the manual comes to order sheet, provide an opportunity for public input early in the meeting. I don't have the entire manual, only what was put on the book that night, but since it stayed over the all other opportunities for public input. And with the exception of myself and a few others, and unless it's a hot topic item, I don't think there's people lining up for the board meetings that have been for a long amount of time to the end meeting. So I hope you would see value to those few minutes of public participation after your discussion. And maybe you just don't see value to some of us who actually should come to the meeting. The last thing I want to give you is the quote number 5 from the Board of Education Code of Conduct, which is, I shall abide by majority decisions of the board while retaining the right to seek changes in such decisions through ethical and constructive channels. I bring this up because I was asked this question during my interview for the yearly vacancy, and if I would be able to abide by this code of conduct. I was under the impression that since clearly I didn't see eye to eye with the board on some matters, there was maybe some concern of how I would handle decisions I didn't agree with. My answer is irrelevant, but I just want to ask you all this. If you did not fully support Mr. Kendall's proposal that you agreed to back in August, was it ethical and constructive to propose and approve a change to the way public participation was handled? Excuse me. Only 30 days after you instituted the new policy, considering you had plenty of time to vet this proposal and bring your ideas to the table before today. Thank you.
Does anybody want to ask a clarifying question about the question? No? Okay, sure. Anybody else? Mr. Cooper, welcome.
Good evening. I'd like to say I agree with everything that Stephanie just said. I'd like to add to that. To the 5 that voted to take away the second participation session, your internal issues that you've got with the president of the board are not serving us, the public, very well. And it's really simple. You guys need to change things back to the way that they were. They'll get changed back in April, most likely, anyways. So why not just do it now and keep things very simple and not have to go ahead and things we know. Accept your board makeup for the next 6 months and remember your purpose, which is to serve the public. I'm not so sure that's always at the top of my hearing or not. I have also a couple of financial things. I've not heard any answers from what I brought up last week at the special meeting, and I don't know if maybe that was pertinent. If you stopped answering things now or not, I don't know. Things go so quickly around here. But I asked a question about the attorneys that represent the board in the district Trans Act, and I was told that they represent our district for approximately 20 years, and we've not had a occasion to go ahead and vet the process of possibly looking at opening it up to new people within 11 years. I'd like to find out when that's going to be put on the agenda, because I think it's well due to work. It's time. It's time that something goes on that day. I also asked about travel charges on snow removal from last winter. I only looked at one invoice, and we got hit $600 in travel charges. I can only imagine how much else there was from last winter to go snow removal. We paid a ton of money to the company that did this. If it's part of the contract, which I'm not saying, I'd like to know why that is. I've never heard of any businesses that I've ran been part of. If somebody would charge us for getting to our location and then charge us for whatever the rates are that they're going to go ahead and do. The last thing is something I brought up to the superintendent several weeks ago. I had asked about $1,000 in professional development coverage that was given to one of the administration, and I'll abide by Mr. Black's rules, and not name the person, but $1,000 was covered for this person, and they were due $1,000, but all throughout the year, there's a company who would get professional development, we pay professional development fees and so on, too, from her venue, and I'd like to know how that works, because it seems to me like we got maybe something strange. So, anyways, thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Hall, any comment on the travel charges or the snow removal or professional development?
Not on the snow removal. I'll make sure we have that piece for you. On the attorney's fees, it was 2011 that Franzik had increased their cost. That was brought to the board in 2011. The board at that time reviewed it and accepted those changes. Since I was not here, I'll ask Erica to.
Right. Yeah, I was wanting to follow up with you, Mr. Cooper, on that too. There were there's a couple pieces, and Paul will talk about this. But in terms of reviewing, it was under it was probably two boards ago now under the Finance Committee at the time, where it was requested from Finance Committee, not the Committee of the Whole of the Board, but Finance Committee, for a review to be done. Through a rubric, and so Mr. Cicerella developed a rubric with regard to fees, attention to detail in terms of projects, relationship, the different areas that that he would assess. And it wasn't just for attorneys, but it was also for our other professional services,
so architects,
and whomever else we might hire for professional consult. So that is in place, and that is done. Bob will be doing that, so that's in place to finance. What the protocol was, as I understood it from the Finance Committee, was should there be concerns that Mr. Cicerella brought to the Finance Committee or they have of him with regard to the rubric and the outcome, then that would come to the Committee of the Whole, the Board, to discuss that for a further review, a more in-depth review. And I was trying to remember, you know, when you asked your question, when the last time we had had conversations around increasing in attorney fees. And I found a letter dated September 16th of 2011, so that'd be almost three years ago. And prior to this, they hadn't raised, Franzik and Radelet, our attorneys, hadn't raised rates in more than 5 years. So this was an increase in rates in fees, but had not increased fees for about almost 6 years. And it was a 1.3% increase from 230 to 245. Per hour for principal advice. So that did come to the board, and we did review, and at that time, you know, did again have a conversation around activity, relationship, value, that type of thing that Bob has with the rubric. So that's my my recollection of it. I just wanted to share that with you too.
And it's important to note that final cost to the school code should not be a determining factor. It really is about those practices, and I have not heard in my year, a little over a year now, I have not heard from board members that they're dissatisfied with Franzic Radelet from that standpoint. So the cost has not increased since the 2011 conversation.
Okay, terrific. And professional development, any comment there? Or?
Yeah, and the professional development, Mr. Cooper, Mrs. Clark, or Ms. Rath, I apologize, brought this up a little while ago. We have spent roughly $100,000, right around $95,000 in professional development, and that's supporting our number one asset, our teachers, in our planning. We looked at all of our plan because I think that was the undertone of what Mrs. Rath was talking about was the planning. And throughout last year, our teachers were out about 1% of the time. Our fifth grade math teachers were out 3% of the time, 4 days. Kindergarten teachers were out 3 days. First grade teachers were out 2. Our level 2 literacy were out 2 days. Our level 2 math was out 3.5. Fourth literacy was out a day. It was really a math focus for last year, pulling teachers out, really working with them on their planning, and really feeling like that was a huge benefit. So I believe in the professional development. I believe in the costs that were expensed for that. Now, that $100,000 wasn't completely planning. There were some other components to it, but a lion's share was the planning. So I absolutely believe in it. I think it's a necessary expenditure for our teachers to continue to gain depth and understanding opportunities for our teachers to work together. I really feel like that's a value time.
Okay, great. Any other public participation? No?
My question was about a specific person.
Oh, no, I was going back to an older, the 90,000. I will get back to you on that piece. Those two pieces, though, I apologize for not being a little more clear with you. No, thank you.
Okay, terrific. Moving on to presentations, reports, and initiatives.
Well, tonight we're very fortunate to have Peg Agnos from Len join us tonight. Oh, I'm jumping ahead. We've got a lovely picture of Lincoln. And Peg, are you going to give us a presentation on our construction? And then, Jack, could you do the Len presentation? We're really trying to throw people off here.
So the Frederick Quinn Corporation construction update by Mr. Hayes.
Okay, we're just going to throw some pictures up here. That's your new playground at Churchill on the northwest corner of the property.
I have not seen that.
Yeah, so in the background you'll see that the play surfaces are being relocated and set up. So the kids will be moving shortly to that new play surface. That's your new field. That used to be basically a huge swale on the north side of the property with the underground stormwater detention in it. So it'll be usable for the future. In a much more, it is. And then that's still your access road and so forth. Now that's Forest Glen. That's the grass coming in under the new underground stormwater detention. So that's going on. And then this is the preparation taking place now for excavation of foundations for the addition that you pulled forward from a schedule standpoint. So those contracts are currently ramping up. Because the first phase is done, and now we can start on the actual addition instead of waiting until the spring. And then next should be the Lincoln, I believe. And so you can see the exterior masonry is substantially complete. The roofing is substantially complete. The screen wall is going up for the mechanical units on the roof. And then we'll be getting ready to do site development or the underground detention between the two pods. That's a door frame, so you can see the interior walls are going to start to be going up inside the addition for the classrooms. So those additions at Lincoln are semi-watertight because the roof is on, so things are progressing nicely. Here at Franklin, as you can see, the site is still a bit of a mess, but the exterior masonry is close to being done so that we can complete the backfill. Slabs are poured inside the building for the classrooms. So once we were supposed to start roof yesterday, but of course the rain came. As soon as it clears up and we can start the roofs and get the roof dried in, then we can finish the rough in and start interior construction for the finish out of the classrooms at Franklin. So that's what's been going on.
Any questions for Jack?
Yeah, that's really what's happened. Anything on the update that we sent you?
This is kind of a curiosity question. So we have our underground detention now at Churchill. It's gone in.
It's done.
So yep. Now we'll be able to test and see with the rain if it works.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yay. This is on page 2 of the update on work outlook. It says completed over the next 30 days. So mm-hmm. in Franklin, and then there was another comment made on page 3 under project schedule and budget around additional premium hours as a non-construction person. That's built into the budget.
It is. We had a line item for premium right. time to make sure we can maintain the schedule.
And then, so how do we know whether or not we're going to start eating up more of those hours than you might have
anticipated.
Forecasted? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're tracking that on a regular basis against the allowances that were there. And in talking through this with Bob, we're going to come back to the next board meeting with a full financial summary of where we stand. So everybody can have the same comfort level that we already have, that the project is tracking financially right where we want it to be. There still remains a strong contingency in the project as well as the allowances. So we'll bring that back to you.
Any other questions for anybody?
Two quick ones. One, your picture kind of showed it at Forest Glen. All the stone that's in there, was that brought in, or was that, did we have soils issues?
Mm-hmm.
Was that any soil borings that we originally had?
Yeah, it was anticipated.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's a lot of stones. So
yep.
And it's all for budget and all that.
Yep.
Okay. And you still have a lot of exterior concrete to pour in at Lincoln and mostly at Ben Franklin.
At Franklin, yep.
So, we're getting to some critical time with temperatures.
Right, we are. We're trying to get to that point so that we can get that done and get the exterior hard surfaces done. We're still hoping to be able to get site concrete, site grading, and first phase of asphalt done at Franklin. We'll probably just do the binder course,
mm-hmm.
go through the winter with the binder course, come back in the spring with the final course.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Good to do it that way. Okay. To me, that's the number one risk item on your update, depending on, you know, obviously we need rising temperatures.
Right.
End of day.
Dry them.
So
yep.
do we have a contingency plan if we don't get the temperatures we need when you get to that?
The work at Franklin, if we can get that site cleaned up and the temperatures don't accommodate getting the asphalt in place, then we're just going to try to pull back as much as we can to free up some hard surfaces. That's really the only contingency plan that we can put into place there, because the portables are sitting on the existing hard surface.
Right.
So we'll just try to pull back as far as we can.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you, Jack.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. I've got a couple.
Okay.
I want to start off by asking, so when these are done, in your opinion, do we have infrastructure issues at these four buildings? If we were to, you know, finish, or if we were to complete phase one, do we still have infrastructure issues at the buildings from your perspective or not?
I'll answer based on the knowledge that I've gained from going through the process over the last year, looking at what various options are for expansion.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a clarifying
sure.
question first? John, when you say infrastructure issues, that makes me think like problems with construction, but that's
no,
not what you mean?
Gyms, bathrooms, hallway.
Okay,
you
so
know.
Space utilization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Not so much utilization, but do we have... Well, we've always talked about in terms of the infrastructure to support the number of kids in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So we added classrooms, and... At Churchill, we did a few things. I think we added a bathroom, right?
Right, right.
So I'm kind of asking, do we still have infrastructure issues once these classrooms are...
The infrastructure word, though, I think means something different. It's more common area
for the number of students that you have? That's, that seems like what your question is.
Yes.
Because infrastructure is underground.
Mechanical.
That makes me think of
that. That's more of just to clarify.
I think that's a good clarification. When you say infrastructure, I think what I'm hearing you mean is core spaces to support the number of students.
Well, we discussed
that building.
Right.
Yeah. My understanding from everything that I've heard through the process is that while these additions are basically just replacing the portables, mm-hmm. so it's the same number of students in general across these buildings. And my understanding is that for location at each school, there are still core space limitations where there are undersized classrooms. There are spaces that are being stressed in terms of lunchroom capacities. Kind of the special program spaces, I guess, is what I'll characterize them at. The buildings still are stressed from a core space standpoint based on the number of students at the facilities. That's my understanding.
Okay. And I'm just going to assume that if, you know, you heard us talking about full-day kindergarten, if we moved to full-day kindergarten and had to put it in our existing facilities, in your opinion, then, is that just exacerbated, or is it?
I think that would be my understanding, too, is that it would exacerbate it. To what extent, I think that's the question that, you know, the next question would be, well, as to what extent?
Right.
And I don't know that there's been any real analysis done from that regard.
And, John, that question is just about this space alone without the phase two.
Yeah, this is all phase one.
Just our
phase one.
Yeah,
location.
Okay. So it's really right sizing that we're still talking about. I mean, that's part of the question.
Well, right sizing has always had a couple components to it. One is the number of kids,
mm-hmm.
and then two, what are we calling these things now? Not infrastructure, but common spaces,
common
right?
Space,
green space, gym.
Yeah, yeah.
Bathrooms, lunchroom,
right.
Special programs, right? Having
but those are all conversations we want to have a phase two conversation, right? What we want to do.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand where this leaves us.
Okay.
Well, I think you raised a good question, though, John. And I'm wondering, you say you haven't done an analysis on how much
just
more space we could be using.
But remember what Jack's role is.
Right.
Okay.
Jack's role is not to be going into our current space, he is to build the four classrooms on each building. That's not
really. Some of these questions are better suited for Ron, the architect.
Yeah.
So I'm giving you my impression from the conversation that we've had anecdotally around this topic.
Okay.
But
so
Jack doesn't walk the classrooms. He doesn't see the building from that viewpoint as we currently sit here today. He's really in charge of ensuring that these classrooms get built.
Is it? Safe to assume that FGM has more information on how close we are to maxing out with what
absolutely. And we
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's some of what we saw at the facility meeting too.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
No, you don't want to be an architect.
Okay, PTA Executive Council. I do not see Lori here, but I assume she sent a representative.
I think we're.
She didn't, but I'd be happy. Yeah, I can have.
Yeah, because you were there.
I'll go through the different schools. I don't know a ton of what's going on at Churchill right now, unfortunately. Hadley just finished up with their Remedy Madness. We are also really ramping up for BAM. Myself and Hillary Schumann are chairing that. We also have about four or five commitments from some of our male teachers at Hadley to help with that. We did change the name. The acronym is BAM. It's still BAM, but it was Becoming Awesome Men, and we decided to change it to Becoming Amazing Men. So we are right now looking for a date for that. At Lincoln, they actually, a funny thing with them, they were supposed to have their PTA meeting. They publicly changed it, and then they changed it again. And then during the course of the meeting, the fire alarm went off, and they have to reschedule the postponement of the meeting. So unfortunately, they haven't made a lot of progress moving through that. But they just finished their fundraising piece as well, which was a Innisbrook wrapping paper. So Ben Franklin, I know they're doing a robotics club. The this year, which they are getting going. I'm very excited about that. And then news that I got from Jen Lewis from Forest Glen is that they did go through the village last week regarding their sign. They're having an issue with the sign, which is a sign out front. And they had ran into some roadblocks, so it looks like everything is moving forward now. Okay.
And Bob attended that meeting with Jen. So okay. All is well. Yeah.
So she's very, very excited about that.
Nice pinch hitting. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Okay, next on the agenda is the Len presentation.
And I've already introduced Peg for. So Peg has graciously joined us tonight to really talk about Senate Bill 16 and some other issues that she hears from Springfield to give the board and the community that background information. So with that, Peg, I'll hand it over to you.
Thanks, Dr. Gordon, and thank you, members of the board. I'm going to use this because I have a whole bunch of notes, because when you deal with the General Assembly and our members of the General Assembly, things change by the minute. So thank you for asking me to come tonight and to talk to you a little bit about Senate Bill 16. And in talking to you about Senate Bill 16, I'm actually going to be talking to you about a lot of other things that are going to be happening around the General Assembly in the next couple of months. And Mike showed me how to use this. I'm going to try to be smart on my own and kind of give you a very brief update. I understand that you, and I have no doubt that Erica gave you a great introduction to Senate Bill 16. So you know about the bill. You know that Senate Bill 16 was passed by the Senate in May. It creates a single formula for school funding. It changes funding for us dramatically, especially in the suburban area. We depend on general state aid very little. We depend more on mandated categoricals. And this really changes the way in which we would get our funding for things like special education, ELL funding, et cetera. It creates a weighting system. So the new system would create a series of weights. I'm not going to go over them specifically today. I would rather talk to you about what we think are problems with the weights and some of the things that we are bringing to the attention of the legislators. One in particular is the way in which they would be weighting special ed students. Back up a little bit. The whole bill, the whole concept of Senate Bill 16 is based on a single formula concept that was developed in the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts has had a number of years now to go back and to tweak the bill and to do some things about the bill. And one thing you have to remember that isn't happening in Illinois is that when Massachusetts changed their formula to this new single formula, they also infused it with a lot of money. The General Assembly created a mechanism to infuse about $1 billion into school funding. We're not getting any new money here. All we're doing is redistributing the current money we have now, which is about $5.5 billion. So all we're doing is taking the money, creating in the pot that we currently have, and just redistributing it back to all of the districts across the state. The categoricals being the most important to districts like ours, it's being replaced by a weighted formula. So in special education, they looked at what they said the average would be for the special ed population assigned. And they determined it would be about 13.8% of your population. They would look at your ADA, your average daily attendance, at your, and that would be in our fall enrollment report. And then they would multiply it out. And in reality, what you're getting is a flat grant per pupil. You'd be getting about $761 or $760 per pupil, no matter what the services are, no matter what, you know, whether it's speech, whether it's, the range of services that we have in special education. There is going to be a hearing next week. The House work group is meeting. Special education advocates are going to be presenting to the House members. I think they know that this is woefully inadequate and an area that they have to work on. The other piece that is interesting and has raised a lot of questions is how they are counting low income. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as I continue my presentation.
Hey, again, I'm sorry, can I just ask you, The Massachusetts, when they infused the extra dollars, what was the rationale behind that? Is that because they wanted to give everybody what they had before and then let the system balance out, or was it just a commitment to education that they felt they needed?
Well, there were two things. There was a court case, and so they kind of pushed into changing the formula. And actually, the court case was the driving factor there. And they knew that the funding system couldn't work. The change in the system, they were not funding the schools up to the level that they were required to fund. And so that was the essence of the case. And when they went to the system, they knew that if they hadn't put the money into the system, it wasn't going to work.
So if they didn't put the money in, they wouldn't have been able to meet the thresholds that they were required to. Okay, thank you.
And so initially when Senator Menard decided that he wanted to look at the way that schools in Illinois, he really only wanted to look at general state aid. He didn't want to look at categoricals or any other elements that go into the funding system. And when we went to see him, there were three or four of us that went to see him. We said to him, you really can't look at the funding formula in its current form. It isn't the funding formula in its pure form. It has had some changes. There have been some changes that have been made, and you can't do that. I mean, especially in this area. We have PTEL, we have TIFs, we have several things that have been done to that formula. And if you don't look at it totally, completely, and entirely, you're going to end up with something that is going to be rather problematic. And I think what you see is exactly what's happening now. You see the printouts. You know what has happened as a result of just taking this formula that has been exacerbated and trying to make a difference and get money where, quite frankly, we all agree needs to be spent, but obviously not at the expense of districts across the state. It allows for a four-year phase-in period. Interestingly enough, it does have some new mandates in it, and then it has some pension language in there that we'll talk about in a little bit as well. After a lot of conversation on the Senate side, and in order to get it through, Senator Menard did amend the bill, and no school district will lose more than $1,000 per student. Interestingly enough, there are only 50 districts that would lose more than $1,000 a student. It's not a real dramatic savings in the bill. It amounts to about it's only 50 districts. It's a very small savings in the bill, but he was able to sell it and get members of the Democratic caucus to go along and push the bill out of the Senate. PTEL adjustment, which is important to some of our districts in McCollar counties, remains, but it is not part of this legislation. It would be now. It comes out of the general state aid. It's not automatic anymore, and the General Assembly does not have to fund it. It would have to be a separate appropriation. So districts who are entitled to a PTEL adjustment would no longer receive that PTEL adjustment unless the General Assembly wanted them to have it. Current developments. I'd really like to spend most of my time talking with you tonight about what's happened over the last couple of, probably the last month or two, and why I think we still have to be vigilant. I think that you all know that Representative Pijos has contacted your district and has let Dr. Gordon know and others know that Representative Chapalavita has assured me in a conversation I had with her last week and Representative Pijos that she, as long as she is the sponsor of the bill, she has no intention of moving the bill during veto session. Today in a meeting with Representative Will Davis, I was out in his office earlier today, and he is the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. He said that they are working to set up a hearing, a public hearing on Senate Bill 16. They want to hold the hearing before the veto session and elicit testimony from districts across the state. Again, their desire is to do something for, and we don't know how many districts this would entail, but for those districts that really need the most help. And but the way the bill is currently drafted, the work that you all have done, the grassroots efforts that have been ongoing across the state, I think they realize that in its current form it can't move forward. We have highlighted some problems. Others have highlighted some problems. I think the ones that have come to light and they recognize must be fixed
as I mentioned earlier, the special ed piece is pretty dramatic. In meeting with Dr. Gordon and with Bob earlier this week, we talked a lot about the special ed piece. I don't believe there is any way that special ed services would be able to be maintained based on the way that they have created this weighted formula across the state. And Representative Chapalavia agrees. And I think that this will be a very lively discussion next week. I think that this probably will be one of the areas that they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and look at very closely.
So she agreed that the maintenance of effort, how they wrote it.
I don't think anyone has been able to understand how that can be maintained at the state and then back at the local level.
Okay.
They've tried to tell us. I know the State Board of Education sat down with a couple of special ed folks and said that it can be done at the local level. I don't know how you can maintain that effort at the local level. We've done some calculations with some of our special ed, co-ops, and it doesn't appear that can be done. So we have taken that information back to the sponsor, and she agrees that absolutely cannot be done. They're very concerned that it would open up the state as well as local districts to some serious concerns. And so she is really very concerned about the special ed piece.
Good.
Secondly, they're very concerned about the poverty count.
On the special ed piece, when you say that it can't be supported, are you saying the $761 is inappropriate, or are you saying that the gap that the districts the districts that are impacted negatively is made up largely of the gap in the special ed fund?
There's roughly $500,000 that they would pull directly from special ed funding. What we brought up last week with Peg is maintenance of effort, which is a legal responsibility of districts and states to maintain that funding source. So for us, if you lose $500,000 out of the special ed funding that supports CASE from our district alone, what we called into question was, how can that be? How can the state get around maintenance of effort and then pass down to us obligations of maintenance of effort that would make it very difficult for us to backfill that $500,000.
So when we look at the 1.6 gap that we, whatever, 500,000 of that is coming from the less funding in special ed. That's where I was trying to go.
Yeah.
And no longer getting that special ed personnel reimbursement provides a second, almost like a, I hate to use the double whammy, but it's a double whammy for those districts that belong to special ed cooperatives, because the cooperatives will no longer be getting their reimbursement. And so that will have to be made up some way, somehow. So that's an additional cost to the local districts.
I mean, that seems like it would open up to a lot of court cases and,
And I think that's what the legislators are starting to question. So that's a really good thing, is that they're starting to ask those questions and are asking for clarifications. So that what that says to us is that, for sure, we don't have to concern ourselves during veto session, which is in November, and then again a week scheduled in December, which is something that we were very concerned about.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of chatter that they wanted to move this bill as quickly as possible and get it back to the Senate. Now and Senator Menard has been out, really pushing hard, especially in communities like ours, and wanting to garner our support. We've had conversations with them and have told them that we're not, if this is what you want to do, understand that there are some really egregious pieces to this legislation. Let's sit down and work it out before you move it forward, this being one of them. The other piece, which has created some really unusual situations, districts that you would think should not be losers, should be gaining, just based on the populations that they serve, the populations that Senator Menard believes need the most assistance. They have high ELL and they have high low-income populations. Well, the way that they have changed the way in which you calculate your low-income population really puts these districts at risk, and they actually end up being losers. And they're mostly alternative districts. And so the preponderance of districts who are alternative funded districts
debit, the alternative
method,
the alternative funding method, end up losing. And so we, you know, that has also been brought to their attention. So that's something that they're going to be reviewing. The state board went on record at their last state board meeting and said that they've got, that has to be looked at carefully. So they're bringing in a national expert to analyze the legislation and report back to see what they can do. And the other piece they're looking at, which may or may not give some, you know, maybe if you're going to be a loser, if this bill were to happen, if you're going to be a loser, maybe you won't be as big a loser, but take out, you know, PTEL and take out TIF and take out corporate personal property replacement tax when you're looking at calculating EAD. And that would help districts that are under the tax cap. Again, we're looking at something that they're trying to Band-Aid a Band-Aid. And I think everyone is realizing that you just can't do that. So that's the easy part of what's happening under all of this. The other kinds of things that are happening is a work group has formed, aside from the House work group, a work group of school districts and advocacy groups that Les has been active in putting together. The Senegal work group is, a Senegal 16 work group is meeting. We are a work group of winners and losers. We have been in close contact with Senator Menar, with the sponsors of the legislation. We have provided them with suggestions on what we think could or could not, in fact, be changed and tweaked. We've talked a little bit about some of those already. And we'll talk a little bit more about them when we talk about what I think you need to be talking about when you are thinking about Senate Bill 16. I think what it's done is shown the legislators that we're just not all out there talking, you know, saying stop, 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 stop. We recognize there's a problem. We know there are districts that need some help, but we don't believe that Senate Bill 16 is the right way to do it. This week, or this past week, the judge that has been hearing arguments on Senate Bill 1 indicated that he is going to hasten the schedule. He's going to be hearing arguments in November, and it probably will be ready to rule on Senate Bill 1 in December. Senate Bill 1 is the pension reform bill. It is, he's on record in the press in Springfield last week saying that the recent court decision, that the decision that was overturned in Springfield, where they the state employees, there was legislation passed that said state employees have to pay, state retirees have to pay for their health insurance. It was overturned. The court overturned that. Now the state has to reimburse the retirees for their health insurance. And going forward, state retirees do not have to pay for health insurance. And this judge, who is going to be ruling on Senate Bill 1, said that this has given them a good foundation for what he thinks he probably will rule on Senate Bill 1. So for those of us who were negotiating on Senate Bill 1, it kind of tells us that Senate Bill 1 will probably be unconstitutional. Why am I telling you this? Because that means that we probably are going back to the drawing board, and next session we're probably going to be talking about the pension cost shift again. Which there is no secret that Speaker Madigan does not want to be in the pension business. He doesn't want to pay for the normal cost of pensions, and he wants to get rid of the RAMP. So what does that mean? It means that districts probably will get the cost shift. It means that you can probably count on 6 to 7% of your, of your salary schedule, and it means that whatever the state saves, how we have said should come back to local districts, which we think is logical. The speaker doesn't think it's logical. He thinks it probably, they feel it should go into the RAMP and pay down the RAMP. So on top of Senate Bill 16, we are kind of saying to the winners, you know, be cautious about what you are working for, because it probably will be eaten up by the cost shift should all of this happen all at once. Then we have, you know, the elections, and we don't know what's going to happen there. We know that Bob asked me earlier, what do you think we should do in terms of budgeting as we talk about December and make plans for next year? I think you all remember that we know that the state budget only gets us through till December 31st. So I don't think it matters who's elected as governor. I think that we probably going to see a tax increase of some kind, because I don't think, or at least the maintenance of the 5%, because I don't think the state can go on without some sort of revenue. So we have that facing us in the relatively near future.
What makes you think that the money that the state would save would go to the local districts?
We asked for it. I don't think we'll get it. We asked
for
it.
Yeah, I mean, that's not... No. That's never happened, right?
Okay. No, but we asked for it.
I just want to make... Yeah. I don't... Okay.
No, but we asked for it. Yeah. We thought that it would be a really good idea that if you're asking us to spend all this money, I mean, you're taking out our coffers when we can least afford it, and so if, in fact, that's the case and you're saving all this money, why don't you put that money back in general savings? And why don't you just fund education at the appropriate rate? Because don't forget, well, I shouldn't say that. Senate Bill 16 is not even based on the full foundation level. It's on the prorated amount.
Right.
It's about 5119 or 5114 is what it's based on. So it's based on a prorated amount. So the whole thing is skewed. It's already, you know, it's already based on an amount that isn't going to be funding you anyhow. So, you know, we're working at a deficit before we even... We're working on a deficit before we even begin, and it's something, again, I guess my message to you tonight is that you just have to be aware, and you just have to be vigilant. I know that a lot of my friends tell me that I shouldn't be worried about this anymore, that maybe we should just kind of relax a little bit and let the veto session go by and see what happens, but I'm not necessarily sure we can. I think that we have to keep talking the talk and walking the walk. I think when you talk to your senators, you may hear that they may tell you that they've already voted, but you have to remind them that any bill that comes back will be a lot different. It's going to look different. It is, and they need to be aware. You need to tell them exactly what that bill will do to you. That bill will reduce your revenue by $1.9 million annually. I think you don't need to be a brain surgeon to realize what that would potentially do to your local district. I think that you need to tell them that 4 years is not long enough for that any of our districts to be able to implement any kinds of financial strategies, to be able to assume that kind of a loss to the local district. I think, again, we're looking for a true definition of what a low-income student really means. We have also believed strongly and are asking for them to consider a regional cost factor. We've made so much noise about this. Back a number of years ago, Len and Villa Park 45 commissioned a regional cost study with the University of Illinois. We did give this to Senator Menard and the EFAC committee, and we understand that there's another reform group that is working on this, and we will be working with them to make sure that that is implemented in the if Senate Bill 16 goes forward. The other piece that we all have to be aware of is that should Senate Bill 16 go forward exactly as it's drafted today, and we end up with a cost shift for all other school districts, Chicago Public Schools kind of get a buy. In the bill, there's currently language that doesn't exactly shift the normal cost to the state, but what it does is it the CPS pension would be, it has to do with their local resources are determined. So in reality, that it would not count against their local resources. So they would really be paying their pension, but then they would be getting it back in terms of general state aid. So you're kind of flip-flopping. So now the downstate teacher's pension, which is we are all a part of the downstate teacher's pensions, all the districts would be paying that, and CPS would kind of be getting the credit, and they would no longer be paying it. So what we are saying is that that has to be the same for everyone. So that's another reason why this bill can't go forward with that provision in the language. There are no mandates, which we also find very interesting, because they're asking us for a list of mandates that we think would help to mitigate the losses that we may feel. But there are no mandates in this legislation, so this is kind of problematic as we look at this bill and we go forward. So Senator Bertino Tarrant has a piece of legislation. She's asked all of us to look at mandates, and I know that Eric has been really involved in mandate legislation. She does have the bill. She's looking at special education. She's looking at a number of other mandates. She's looking at, I think I mentioned to Dr. Gordon, prevailing wage, and she said, no, I don't want to talk about it. But then she said maybe prevailing wages as it relates to school district construction. Maybe that would be something she could consider. She's looking at physical education, which we know how that is, but wants to be creative and wants to help us. But the piece that we want to be mindful of there is that we would never trade off a list of mandates or support in any way of a piece of legislation that looks like Senate Bill 16. So next steps, the House Working Group is meeting. I will be there next week testifying around special education issues. The School District Working Group, Concepts and Revisions Driven by Suburban Districts, continues to meet. Our next one council meeting will be on October 24th. We don't know what's going to happen with the election. And as I said now, we think that we're going to have a hearing sometime between now and November 19th. And will be an opportunity for the public to provide testimony to the probably the House Education Committee. So at least they're opening it up a little bit and asking for public testimony. I don't know what's going to happen. I wish that I did know what was going to happen. I wish I could make it a little bit easier for you. But I would suggest that you don't back off. I think you continue the pressure. Your legislators are all no votes. We all know that. We just don't know. And so when you're thinking about your decisions for the future, just keep some of these things in mind. And I don't know what to say. I wish I could tell you. We knew going into this that our budget was, that you were going to, we're just on a 6-month until we see what happens. But I don't think they're going to close school districts on January 1st. I think that we're going to have a budget next year, but I don't know what it's going to look like. So,
Peg, obviously you worry about this a lot, so thank you for doing that for us. I've been involved in the board for a while, and I would say probably the last, 10, 12 years, there's always been this threat of, through some way or another, of taking money away, and it always impacts our districts, right? But I think at one time there was even take the property taxes and give them to the state, and they'll push it back to the local school districts. You have your pulse on this. Is this further along than it's ever been, or is this just another, something that's going to try, and when they do it, there's just so much impact that everyone kind of backs away from it?
I think it's elevated the conversation, and I think what may happen, I don't think they're going to back off. So what we are kind of pushing for parallel to this conversation is, and we've asked Senator Menara, why do we have to have this drastic of a reform right now? We recognize there are districts that won't be able to open their doors. But we also recognize that the state can't take over these districts like they've had to do with East St. Louis and North Chicago. For someone who goes to all the meetings, we know which districts are, the districts the state is pouring millions of dollars into to keep afloat. So you have, and again, I don't know what the percentage is. So now we're in the top 10% of the districts that would be losing, that would be giving away the most money. And then there's another level. The next 15% are the districts that I mentioned that they're kind of referring to as anomalies that should not be losing money, but they're losing money. So those are the 25% of the districts that are going to be giving the money to help the bottom. So that would be gaining the most right now as Senate Bill 16, as you're reviewing the Senate Bill 16 spreadsheet. So we said, it's likely that there will be some new revenue coming into the state. So isn't there a way, and proration has done a terrible disservice to everyone. You can't keep prorating. We recognize that, too. You can't keep prorating. So how about this, John? If you come up with something for next year, and I don't know what that something is, but, somebody threw this out the other day. you take that new revenue and you hold everybody flat. We've been held flat before. We've had years where we've gotten nothing else. So you hold flat, the districts can be held flat. So you don't get that $1.9 million decrease. You're just kept at your current level, you know, your FY14 level. But the new money goes to those districts that need it. And then we figure this out by not band-aiding an already band-aided formula. Part of the problem is you don't have anyone in the system that was there when the formula was implemented. People are gone, so you don't have anyone even at the university level. You don't have those persons. You don't have GL and HIPROD anymore, who was there. You know, those financial folks that put the formula in place. And so everyone keeps saying, yeah, the formula works if you just leave the formula alone, and that's actually a true statement. So if you put a couple of university types in, because this doesn't talk about adequacy at all, which is what you're really talking about. You're talking about what does it really take to give all these kids what they need across the state. And so this doesn't talk about it. The way that Senate Bill 16 is written, it doesn't even talk about what those kids really need until 2019. Well, that's not right either.
But even under your scenario, you know, school districts like ours lose. We just, you know, we don't get the increases or whatever. So eventually you got to start making that up, you know, unless you work with it. So ultimately the goal is, you know, either we lose or they will keep coming up with something and it'll just go on for another 20 years or 30 years and nothing happens like it has in the past.
Well, it's partly. I think that... Are we all at a point now where we say, wait a minute, I guess you have to dig deep, but if that conversation happens, everyone's going to have to dig deep. And I guess I'm going to have to come back to you and say, to all my member districts and other advocates will have to come back to their member districts and say, hey, this is what's on the table. Do you believe that this should happen now? Do we have a belief system as well as, I'm just throwing this out there. This isn't me talking. This is not anybody else talking. This is me talking right now. And do we have a belief system? I don't know. You know, there's so much into it. I was on a board back in the late 70s and all through the 80s, and I never quite understood why we were giving the state such a pass.
Yeah.
And I think now we're all feeling the fruits of our labors, and the state got this pass. You know, and the feds too. I mean, special ed piece. The feds were supposed to pick up 40%. The state was supposed to pick up 40%. The local district was supposed to pick up 30% or something like that, whatever the division was. And they haven't. So that's why we have that special ed report in May that says how much every district picks up expenditures over revenues. So it's all skewed. You know, that all of it is skewed.
So the people that are in the districts that benefit from this, what are they saying? What is their pitch?
In DuPage, we only have one district, and it's West Chicago 33, and he's actively participating in our work group. And his concern is that money's not going to last. And so if the state keeps doing this, eventually they can't go to the top 10%, the next 15%. Pretty soon they're going to go to the next layer, which are the districts that are benefiting, and they're going to take from them. You know, it's just going to keep happening. It's a vicious cycle. And it goes down and it goes down. I mean, you know, it just keeps happening. So if you don't infuse the system, I mean, the answer is fully fund education. And so we're saying to them, let's figure out, you know, a revenue source. And there are a lot of smart people in the state that say there's ways to raise revenue. But you know what happens when you talk about raising revenue. I mean, it's a tough conversation. But, you know, there are creative ways to raise revenue, too. All kinds of ways to raise revenue. So this is a huge, you know, and education is only a little piece of it. There's human services and so many other, you know, entities that are fighting for the same dollars. But now for years we coasted. When human services and social services and some of the other groups were getting cut and getting cut and getting cut, we were not. And now it's coming back to public education, and we're gonna get hammered this year too. We're gonna, you know, we're going to get. There'll be a lot of voucher bills, and there'll be a lot of charter school bills. There's going to be a lot of fighting for public dollars in the General Assembly this year. So, you know, and a lot of, you know, kind of press has been all around, and, you know, we're... Erica?
Thanks. I know the budget hearings are coming up for this week, and there's still 4 hours. So is there any, what's the work group talking about in terms of showing up for some of that conversation? Because it's all obviously connected.
Yeah, I just put out a little email out to Rob, because I was calling all week, and I haven't talked to him about it. But I thought, wow, we really have to take our front of the hearings this year, don't we? So I haven't talked to him before, we have to do that.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and those just for interest sake, there's a one in Naperville this year,
yes.
And then downstate, central, and
yeah,
so it's spread
and
out.
And there'll be one at conference.
Yeah.
Oh, there will be, okay. Yeah, they have a meeting during conference, the state board, and I believe they're going to have a budget hearing during conference.
The other thing you said is that Representative Chakravita, she said that she's agreed not to have this during lame duck session. Veto session.
Yeah.
But what about the lame duck session?
Anything goes.
Right.
And does everybody understand lame duck? Lame duck is when the 98th General Assembly is retired and the new one takes over. And just, you know, for the sake of everything. Just, you know, that's when we got the income tax hike, that's when we got the pension reform bill, the last one. And the speaker can make it 2 days, he can make it 3 days, he can make it as short as he wants or as long as he wants. So anything goes. But,
And so I appreciate that she's, you know, giving you that commitment, but it doesn't go past.
So you've been listening. It doesn't go beyond the VO session.
Yeah.
And what happens is, you know, that's when deals are cut. You know, those who have to close their elections, that's when they're promised new jobs and to come if they want to vote and all that kind of stuff. And that's totally out of our hands. And that's why you have to get to your legislators now and just get a real firm commitment from them now. Because, and as we were told by Senator Redondo or whoever it was, they don't even have offices during lame duck, so you can't even see people. They don't even have offices at the Capitol, so it's kind of hard to see people. So that's why we're doing all our lobbying now, our grassroots lobbying. So, and thank you, Erica, for doing an excellent job. I hope you're watching that. And I'm so happy that you're part of the Red Executive Committee, too. We're really getting on those. I'm glad to have you. Breath of fresh air.
Happy to do it.
Yeah. But it's a busy time of year. But thank you. Thank you for being
here. Thank you.
Thanks for your insight, too, as well.
Yeah,
that's lovely. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And good luck on your board work, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peg.
Okay.
Drive safely.
Oh, I will.
Thank you so much. Discussion items. Final bid packet recommendation for Forest Glen and Churchill Building additions. Bob and Jack.
Okay, so we're coming back for the last four bid packages from the Churchill and Forest Glen bid opening. We previously recommended the award of 16 trade packages of the final four, and they're the low responsible bidder, so it's no irregularities, pretty straightforward. It's just some of the miscellaneous items that are left to award from that bid opening. So, mm-hmm. Any questions?
It looks straightforward. Like, again, the 29 have cut it down. I see it's still in the budget, which is good.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, we just didn't get, when we previously presented the 16, we just hadn't scoped out these final four packages. We hadn't met with them, talked to them, make sure that they had the scope. Now we have, so we just formally present them. This is for discussion and then a vote at the next board meeting. Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward. Yeah.
Is there any change ever between when the board takes action and the amount of the bill? I mean, that's going to stay stable.
That's their contract.
That's it.
After you approve it, the next day we write the contract with that number, and it goes out to them, and that comes back, and Paul signs it based on the board.
I mean, they could always walk away if they wanted to, I guess. But
yeah, it usually happens prior to us presenting it like this, and that has happened. Throughout this project, people have
walked. Yeah. I mean, I have one question that maybe could change it. I don't want to take this into a huge discussion, but You know, we've been talking about full-day kindergarten, and I just, you know, just keep running some ideas through my head. So if we, you know, went to phase two and decided that full-day kindergarten would be provided at each of the schools, and I'm just thinking specifically of Churchill because I think it's the one for me that just seems to have the challenges in terms of, you know, space. If we, and I don't want to use the word stop, but if we redesign Churchill to go and put full-day kindergarten in that building, is that something that could be done? In other words, you know, change the design so that it's whatever it needs to be to have full-day kindergarten in it, as well as get rid of the other four portables. Is that something that if we decided to do and moved on, that would still allow us to meet the timeline of next year, or is that something that would just really throw our timeline into another a year later? I know it's a hard question to answer.
It is a hard question, and we, you know, kind of sidebarred a little bit just thinking about this. It would definitely throw your timeline out the window in terms of an August delivery of the building because of the redesign and you have rebidding and elevators and so forth. But I will say that one of the things that has been floated out there for Churchill, we're putting four classrooms on essentially the west end of the gym. Simple math. The concept is shown the future addition west of the current addition, planned addition, of another pod to replace the four portables. Now, given the topography of the site, if you wanted to then pursue a two-story addition, future addition on the existing proposed addition, I think that's definitely feasible and something that could be considered. It doesn't address the earlier conversation about core spaces and lunchroom and all the other things. But to answer your question directly, the current proposed four classroom addition that's part of this recommendation, it would blow that timeline. It wouldn't be able to be done by August.
Okay.
But if you went ahead with this four, the future four to replace and then deal with kindergarten as part of that, you could look at a two-story from that standpoint.
Two-story west of the four that are there now?
Yes.
Not two-story on where the four are going now?
Correct.
So that would be committing to a bigger footprint?
In the future, yes, it would be. I'm not an architect, but the additional four has already been conceived to the west of this addition, so it would just be turning that into a two level.
I know,
but we're going into other items outside of what 6A was to talk about. I prefer to keep those in phase two conversations. So this was to talk about the final bit recommendation for fourth and the church.
And this, what we talked about in finance committee was two things. One, this does bring all the trades to the table. This is the last ones we'll see.
For
phase one.
Yes.
So this kind of closes it out as far as you coming here and presenting bids to us.
Yep.
And then when you only, and my, the other point we made in finance committee, there was one of these bids where you only, or one of these trades where you only had one bid, but it's the acoustical ceilings. And they were in line with the other per unit bids that we had at Ben Franklin and Lincoln.
Yep,
that's what we talked about at finance committee, just for clarification.
Thank you. Okay, transfer of funds from the education fund to the debt service fund.
So this is an annual recommendation and resolution that I bring. Start with the finance committee and ultimately to the board. We are required to transfer funds from where the funds are originally budgeted, which in this case is the education fund, and we're required to pay those funds out of the debt service fund. So really all this is an inter-fund transfer in the amount of $202,000 from our ed fund into our debt service to be able to make the appropriate payments from that fund. This is according to the Illinois Program Accounting Manual, and I'm required to follow this process whenever I'm making capital payments like this. Any questions?
Pretty straightforward.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Supplemental pay?
What?
The recommendation that you see in front of you is for discussion only, and it's based on the most recent meetings of the Supplemental Pay Committee.
Supplemental Pay Committee is a group that's made of representatives from the Glen Ellyn Education Association, administration, and then Eric is on our committee as our board representative. And really the goal of the committee is to make sure that we keep our supplemental pay activities up to date, in line with what kids want and need, and in the line of what we've bargained with our teachers association. So at our most recent meetings, one of the meetings we had was last May, and we had received proposals from teachers who had started clubs or had begun to consider some new clubs. What we had recommended funding is the English Language Learner Club. It runs after school at Hadley. It has run successfully for a year already, and we felt that that was something that should be supported moving forward. Consistently serves 25 to 30 kids 4 days a week, providing homework help, some front loading of instructional materials if needed. Then we also met in September, and we took a look at some of the changes that were happening in terms of kind of an after effect of the switch of band and orchestra to having their full band and full orchestra rehearsals during the school day as a class instead of before school. So as a result of that, there were some changes that we're recommending to band and orchestra so that it more accurately aligns with the amount of student contact time and the groups that we have in our agreement. And then with cheerleading, we've switched to a different conference, and so that has impacted the number of games and the length of time that the young women are going to be spent cheering. So we have made some recommendations for some changes to cheerleading. Tried to lay it all out to show what was an add, what was a drop, what was a replace, so you could see the whole kind of plan.
I would just add that in the conversation on all of the band and orchestra pieces that we have one of our is Samantha's band? Yeah, band having teachers on the committee, which was really helpful because it was to shift from where we were to where we are now in terms of moving it into the day. We really needed to have that insight to understand where the dollars were going to be shifted in terms of payments. So that was helpful, and actually Paul Marcheski was involved too last year. So I simply want to say as a committee member and the work that goes into the conversation, there's a lot of diligence around what I mentioned before as a part of the committee, which is to look at activities to sunset if they are appropriate to do so and not keep hanging them on, and to look at the shifting nature and needs of junior high in particular, but all of our schools in terms of their needs. So I think the committee did a nice job of doing a reality check on how much supplemental pay needs to go to, and you can see that there's a savings of $6,400 this year as a result of that, which is great. So I'm assuming you guys talked about that at finance as well. I think good work, and people agree on this, so it was unanimous moving forward, especially with the ELL piece too.
Sure. Thank you. Anybody else?
Thanks, Lori.
All right. Public participation protocol. Does anybody want to talk about it, or is it just me? Just me?
I think it's you.
No, I'll share some thoughts. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. We've had some members in the community send us some emails and spoken publicly about revisiting this, and I tried to take in all the discussion we had about it, and I, went back to the tapes and. As I see it, there were kind of three things that we discussed. One was, putting times on the agenda, engaging in listening sessions, and then moving public participation up front and having it one time up front. And I'm not really here to talk about the times on the agenda or engagement in the listening sessions, as I think we all agreed that putting times on the agenda was a good idea. And that engagement, listening sessions was going to be good. And I think we have our first one December 3rd or something like that.
Mm-hmm. December 3rd.
And then March and then May or something like that. So we got three of those. So I think that's all great. So I went back to the discussion, and, I felt that we heard a lot of, that the Illinois School Board Association recommended that the public participation be up front on the agenda. It was best practice. It's what was suggested in the training, and I'm just kind of using words that were seem to be repeated. This desire to respond in writing if you can't answer it now. I call this, this discussion the go back to the training discussion. And then you know, according to the training guide, you know, your public participation is at the beginning, and you move on with your meeting. And that was a lot of the, you know, the way that it was presented in the training, and I'm not saying it was presented inaccurately or biased or anything like that, but, you know, just you guys know me that, you know, when I get something in my head, I like to dig deeper. So, like I did with the, you know, whole how do you reorganize the board when someone resigns, I called the IASB, and I really tried to understand intent. You know, why is it that, you know, they feel you have to have public participation up front? What's the intent of it? Not necessarily just the words in the book, because there were lots of words in the book, too, that, you know, you could read a little differently, too. So I talked to I can't wait to get his name, but I do that all the time, to the author of the book. Sorry, I feel bad because I spoke to him. So that's not right. give the man credit here. Yeah, Roger Eddy, who was the author in, you know, of the book. And I just want to at least share the thoughts and comments on the intent of why it's presented that way in the book. And really, the IASB, they really just, they looked at this from a statute requirement. So his comment was, when they put together this training, there's a statute that says a board must provide the public the ability to participate. So from his perspective, and from, you know, the way they wrote it and their thinking behind it and the intent, you got to have public participation. There's nothing from their perspective that says, hey, it needs to be up front, in the back, or in the middle. But they chose to put it up front because the thinking at the time was that if you have public participation one time, right, which is by statute, you have to have public participation. Mm-hmm. And if you had it at the end, the public might feel that you're doing that purposely to keep them up to the wee hours of the night and really, you know, not wanting to participate and not wanting to be a part of it. So that's really, you know, essentially, you know, the words are citizens who attend a meeting in order to address the board should not be forced to sit through the entire meeting, although I'm sure they love to. And that's why many boards place public participation early in the agenda. Mm-hmm. However, it is not from what the ISB does not say, which is the way I felt a little bit when you look at the book and you use words like, this is what's suggested, this is the best practice. The ISB does not say a best practice is to only have one public participation. Rather, they're actually supportive of the board exercising what they feel works best in their community. But I just wanted to make sure that people understood, at least on the board, you know, as I was listening to the conversation, you know, it's not that they're not saying you should just have one. They're just saying statute says you got to have one. Mm-hmm. So it's most convenient for people to put it early, you know, early in the meeting. I felt that the intent of that was important. And then I thought through, you know, the full-day kindergarten discussion, right? And we had people who spoke at the beginning of it. I thought we had a great conversation, a lot of viewpoints. And I just feel logistically it's a challenge for us to get some comments from people who want to speak. Now, yes, people can send us emails, but we're here for all the people. And some people don't like to send emails. Some people would prefer to come up and speak and are better at doing that than writing an email. Some people have issues with languages and writing is not their forte, and we've gotten some of those, too. So sometimes they feel it's easier for them to come up and speak. And some people don't like to speak at all, and they'd rather put in an email. So, you know, I feel that logistically we now had people that came to this session. They could have given us some comments at the end of the session while it was fresh, but now we're forcing them to come to two meetings. We've sort of trained the community, you know, or provided this ability to have this participation at the beginning and at the end, and I just feel that that is really not the intent of the IASB, was not to say just have one. And I think that at a minimum, we should move the public participation to after the discussion items so that we can get people's comments. They only have to attend one meeting. I would still say that it'd be nice to have one up front so that those that do need to come early and it's on an agenda item can say it. And then also, after the discussion, maybe not the comments as I had proposed earlier, but at least have a public participation after that where they provide comments to everything they've heard. In listening to the tapes, you know, I think, Patrick, you were leaning at least a little bit to putting it after that. At least that's what I picked up on it. Erica, I, you know, picked up that you weren't necessarily against the second public participation, but, you know, yeah, I heard that several times. And, you know, I did hear from Catherine a little bit that I want to make sure that people get a chance to speak before they vote. And the way our process works, they do, but we're forcing them to attend two meetings to be able to do so. So I was basically wanted to lay all that out in terms of my discussion with the ISB, the author of the book, reiterate that it's really not their intent that we just have one and it's up front. Their intent is statute says you got to have one, so have one. Mm-hmm. And ask that we reconsider at a minimum moving it to after discussion items so we can get people's comment, but still think that we ought to have one at the beginning and one after discussion items. It doesn't have to be at the end.
John, was your intent that this would be an action item at the next meeting after we discuss it tonight?
Based on our protocol, that's the way we would do it, yes.
Okay.
And especially, I feel, since two board members aren't here, we probably would at least wait for them to be here, since mm-hmm. especially the sort of the driver of the change is not here. So. So I don't know if you guys had comments on that. If you're resolute that it's not going to make sense, but I felt we were missing, you know, the intent of why something was developed is always important to me, not just necessarily. You know, you could pick up the book and say, "Oh, public participation is at the front." Actually, one of the agendas they have it much later mm-hmm. in the meeting, but you pick it up and you say, "Oh, this is what they want," and then you call them and you talk to them and you go, "Well, this is what the group was thinking."
Appreciate that.
Part of what happened at the last meeting, you know, after our the facility meeting, the special workshop we had last week, was we got a really great, thorough response to this community member's comments around a full-day kindergarten, all-day kindergarten. Mm-hmm. You know, we all got it. We, you know, three pages long. And I responded to the community member as well. And in it, the community member mentioned about asking us to take time to fully read this as the audience, as there was no comment time at the end of the meeting. And my response to this community member was, and I'll just read it to you so you know what I wrote to this person. In reference to public comment, the time you gave to thoughtfully lay out your position and reasons would not have been as detailed as this email were done at the end of the board meeting. I personally print and reference emails received because they do offer deeper insights, whichever position a person has on an issue. This is helpful to me, so thank you. This is helpful to me and certain other board members as well. And, you know, I share that because in my response to another community member immediately after our move to, you know, shift public participation was that it was apparent to me at that particular meeting that there were that community members want conversation, and public participation is, in some boards they call it public comment, is a 3-minute, is a comment, and it's important. It's not and I often have in over years followed up with individuals either immediately after the board meeting or emailed them to make sure that I understood what they were asking or commenting on in those 2 or 3 minutes. And I think, you know, I hear what you're saying, John, and I followed up with a couple of other boards, and they're in between, like you have done too, and asked, you know, why at the beginning, why in the middle, if it's in the middle, you know, what's your intention behind it, what's the purpose? And the goal is to hear public comment and then offer that opportunity, but really other opportunities to do a deeper dive. And that's why a couple of districts have gone to what we've been talking about, which is to add our meetings, December 3rd, March, and May being one. But in coming tonight and seeing that this was going to be on the agenda, I really think, and I think having Peg Agnos here tonight is a good example of this, that I've gotten more kind of anecdotal comments, even by neighbors on my street, about Senate Bill 16, issues around taxes, how it's going to impact other programs we might want to roll out, and what does that mean for me as a taxpayer in Glen Allen, you know, or Wheaton, or other district areas, Lombard, too. And I think that that's the value of this. I think there's several levels of responsibility. One is to offer public comment at our meetings in the moment so that we can get that kind of reaction, in this case, you know, from issues coming forward. But I feel like where we've not fulfilled our responsibility, and I'll go back to former board member, you know, willing to work with me about board goals around communication that the board could not agree on, so never move forward. This is 5 years ago. And it was on communication. So I feel like this is coming back because, and even more so now, because there's so much information out there that people want to know about, and not just comment on, but really do a deeper dive, that this is our responsibility, our opportunity to go out and then build out some other sessions. So one of the things I wanted to at least put on the table for discussion, and then we can talk about this again at our next meeting, is for two board members to be willing to co-host these sessions. So I think because of Senate Bill 16, with pension reform coming up, et cetera, and the kind of interest we have, that we could rotate those, and it opens up the conversation, and it gives more people an opportunity to actually come in and converse, and not only comment, which people have a chance to do, or follow up in email, as you know folks will do, or contact us personally, which people will continue to do. There's a lot of opportunities, and I think where we've fallen down, my opinion as a board, is being out there and have more of the larger conversation. So we do a 90-minute, 60-minute, hour and 15-minute coffee. We could rotate them at the schools because we're not rotating our board meetings right now, which we've gotten away from, which I think is too bad, too. And it could bring more of the community in, actually physically seeing our schools, which I think is so important, because folks don't come into our schools unless they come for a meeting of some sort. But allow us to have host these and have a deeper dive, invite subject matter experts to the table to come in and have these conversations, and just open that up. I feel like, for me, this timing is around the conversation of some more responsibility to have broader conversations in addition to the comments and the emails and all those other ways they can get in touch with us. I think our board is accessible. I don't know that we have discussions and conversations the way our community has evolved in wanting some of that. And the example I gave actually in my email to one community member was when Mrs. Gallo gave the presentation for special education, hand raised, a question, and wanting, more information. And then even as the board was talking, other hands going up to have comment or conversation. So I feel like we have a responsibility for that. And this is a great time to do it because there's so much on the table for us. Our phase two, our all-day kindergarten conversation, certainly pension reform, talking about the budget right now. Finance could host one just about the budget and talking about that. So we might be more creative.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I think we all agree that engage in listening sessions or discussions or whatever is a good idea, right? I'm really focused more on just our meeting here and the ability to have public participation. I don't agree. That email is great, right? And I sent a response too, but you know what? Not everyone has email, and not everyone can write an email. And
right, but we're not precluding any of that in terms of public comment and
no, but we are,
and conversation.
We are sort of asking people to, attend a little, come twice to participate. And
that's what I'm saying,
at a minimum, if we just wanted one.
If people care about something, then they're going to show up. I mean, we cared enough, all of us, to run for a board seat or seek out the interim position. People are on committees because they care. I mean, I think if you care enough about it, you show up or you find a way to have that conversation. And I feel really strongly that we have a community that wants to converse and not simply comment. And if we're willing as a board, where we couldn't do this 5 or 6 years ago, but if this board is willing to do that, I think that that, for me, sets a much better tone than simply a second level of comment at a meeting twice a month. So that's, I'll make that comment. I know we're going to discuss it and we'll bring it back.
How often do you suggest that?
Well, you know, I was thinking, you know, every other month, maybe the off months that we already have these other ones set up. So if we could, I'd be willing to host one in November if, you know, one of our schools would be willing to open it up to us, you know, Churchill hosted in the LRC, whatever it might be, an LMC, then they could be on the off months. But it would be on a subject so that community members would know they could come and then have a deeper conversation around a subject area and not 100 things, but really areas that really the board wants insight on, you know, like what we were talking about tonight earlier. So that's my thought. And I know I kind of talked about that earlier when we were discussing it, but you know, I just feel like we have a larger responsibility to conversation and not just comment. And this is a piece of it, and it's important. There's a lot of ways to get.
I think everyone agrees with that. So I don't think that's what we're discussing here. So
I think it is. I think it's broader than just public comment. So
anybody else? Catherine?
I think maybe we need to take a broader view of what's before us as a board and ask ourselves how much time we should spend talking about decisions. I'm feeling like we've already put a lot of time in on this, and I think you probably feel that way too, because you put a lot of time, especially contacting IASB, et cetera. I don't know if we can come to a consensus by talking about it more. I think we are going to have a disagreement. I want to get along and I want to be able to run a business board. That's very important to me. Certainly, like I've said this before, it's on record. I think having email communication and listening sessions is a great way to get public input, and it is more extensive than somebody talking for 2 or 3 hours. So I'm not trying in any way to shut out public input at all.
Okay. Patrick, anyone?
Well, I'll wait for the recommendation next week.
Okay. Joe, anyone?
No.
Okay. So it'll be option one will be at least after the discussion items.
So,
and then option two will be
okay.
One at the one at the beginning and one after the discussion.
Yeah. And I would offer to board members.
But you know what? I've got to ask.
Yeah.
Is this the consensus of the board? Do you want this moved on? This is a board decision on moving this to action items. And it's not an action item, it's a consensus item.
It's just on the same part of the agenda.
It would be on the same part. I just want to make sure.
I'm fine with John's request. To wait.
Okay, that's what I needed.
Who wants to wait till the other two members are here?
I think they should be here.
One more conversation, and we'll be seeking consensus again.
I think that's appropriate.
And if it needs to, as we look at the agenda for next time, if my recommendation in terms of adding these off-month sessions, hosted sessions, can be added to it, then I'd like feedback on that as well.
Yeah,
so people would be willing to do that.
It's a great idea. We should consider it. So.
Okay, so I'll have both on there.
Thank you.
So, sorry. What's going to be on the agenda?
So it'll be another, it'll be back on discussion item for public comment or public participation. I'll list the two that John mentioned tonight.
Which are?
Which is one in the middle. His preference would be to have one at the beginning and then one after discussion items. That's what I heard.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be at the end, but after we have our discussion so we can get into it. Yeah.
So what we're doing today is not on the table.
It's current practice. It would have to be on the table.
Tonight.
Yeah.
is on or off the table?
I think you'd have to, if you're going to talk about all this, you're going to have to come to consensus one more time. And that's why I'm asking, is this what a board direction to me, or is this an individual board member asking this? I mean, that's...
I don't think you have anything on your board.
John's asking that, right? Mm-hmm.
But the board has to give the superintendent direction, not one person. Mm-hmm. So that's all I'm seeking. I'm not looking for anything here other than, is this what the... Do I have consensus by a couple board members to tell the superintendent to put this on for the next agenda item? That's what I'm asking. That was my question.
I think the correct... As the president, John has the ability to set the agenda, correct? So he can put this on the agenda.
But now that it's here...
And he's asking to put it on next week, and he has the right to do that.
As a consensus...
Board, as a board president, he can put...
But the board has also the right to say, is this a board decision to move this forward? Is the board directing me, or is one individual board member? That's my question, because that's the difference here, because I'm hearing four other board members say, this isn't where I'm at. I'm not trying to stifle.
Let's cut to the chase here. We could shut this down right now.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I just want to ensure that we're having the right conversation and that the superintendent is taking direction from the board as it is important. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm asking. I'm not trying to stifle one way or the other. I'm saying, does the board give the superintendent... Because what I heard was no. I was not hearing consensus to move this forward.
It's my position that we continue to do it as we're doing it now, if it's been changed, but add these other conversations, board-hosted, specific topic conversations, so we can get broader input from the community. I want to continue practice as we have it now.
Did you want to discuss this again next in 2 weeks, October 27th?
I'll do the consensus of the board, but that's my position.
The way I see it is John, as the president, has the ability to put it on the board, and if he wishes, then he should put it on the board. On the agenda, I mean, the board agenda. Outside of that, the current practice is fine.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys. Action items. Are there any items board members would like pulled from the agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which includes human resources personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations, finance facilities and operations, school district payment order, September 18th through October 2nd, 2014, other matters, the approval of board meeting minutes, September 22nd, 2014. Board of Education regular meeting, September 22nd, 2014. Board of Education regular meeting closed session, October 6th, 2014. Board of Education special meeting. Second?
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Borchansky?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Yes. No superintendent recommendation, so superintendent's report.
So you have the enrollment report in front of you, and what you have in front of you is the fall housing report. That's what the state considers the numbers that how they fund school districts. That's based off of a September 30th count of students. So you have that in front of you. We looked at a number of variations overall. The district itself is down 79 students from the previous year. Community members asked, how does that all shake out? Why are we down those numbers? We looked into it a little bit. We looked into it fairly extensively. We have about Out of those numbers, about 43% of those students, their families, moved to another state. 32% moved to another district. 11% is in private schools, St. Pat's, those types of programs. But what we do notice is some of those parents bring their students for kindergarten there, and they come back, and you notice that in our first grade numbers, and that's pretty consistent over time. And parents tell us that. Is it the whole 11%? No, that's not what I'm saying, but there are some within that number that definitely are looking for that. So our numbers are there. They're a little bit down from the previous year. But I'm glad that we waited until we really looked at the September 30th housings to look at apples against the previous year where we were at.
Do we know what impact the apartments?
Yeah, I appreciate that. We had 14 families from the Lincoln community who were impacted due to the housing or the apartment complex changing ownership.
So that, and that's directly tied to the apartments. It's not tied to moving out.
That one we know moved directly from those families left us.
So they moved out of Parkside. They had to move out because of that.
Because of the change in ownership in whatever changes they were making.
And they left the district.
Yeah.
14 families is not a huge number out of all of our families.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it depends on the number of children in those families, because it can be four children, five children, you know, larger families.
So it definitely had an impact on us.
You think? Okay.
Oh, and Lincoln. Okay. And as well as Hadley.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions on the enrollment?
Anything else, of course?
I do. We had our institute day today. It was really focused on planning throughout the district. I was there for most of the morning. It started with Hadley, working with the teachers over at Hadley and the principal and the APs. And then I was able to transition over to our elementary, over to Churchill, where we brought all of our elementary teachers, and they were planning by levels and groups. A lot of good energy there with principals, coaches, Karen. Each of them were facilitating a group around the planning process. Really pleased with the day, the outcomes. You know, we're asking a lot of our teachers, but we really believe in our planning process. To make a significant difference for our kids. Why, again, on these institute days, I really like that we've transitioned these into planning days, so we're pulling teachers out less for less than during the regular school day. But it was a fantastic opportunity today, and I think we had some good feedback from our teachers. Any questions on that?
I just want to make a comment on the PD, and I'll have to mention this before, but Karen, was it Schomburg 54 that came to present to us last year for professional development? Wasn't it Schomburg?
In August,
yeah. Yeah, because I remember just talking to one of the teachers. This goes back to the professional development that we had. You know, we had a lot of it this year. And I remember asking one of the co-facilitators, it was before they started because they had to shoot out kind of quick, you know, what did they see in terms of a lift up in terms of professional development needs, et cetera? And they said, you're going to see a kick because we're going to be needing to really work on areas that teachers may or may not have been focusing on. And so conversation came to my head when we were talking about the dollars associated with it, because it's just a natural flow between the improvements that we're making, the changes that we're making, and that you have to scaffold that with the PD piece. But they did talk about that, so that might be an interesting conversation with them, too, to see what they found. Yeah.
So, you know, lately we've been getting some nice press from our local and from the Chicago Tribune regarding a number of pieces of work that we're doing recently. A reporter from the Chicago Tribune came out, interviewed us around what she saw as very impressive math scores, wanted to know what was going on there. So that will be coming out hopefully tomorrow or the next day. Spend some time with her. And then we have an opportunity Thursday to have a conversation with the U.S. Department of Education regarding some of the work that our teachers are doing. Our teachers are, as I said earlier in the plan, our teachers are working their tails off. We have amazing teachers doing amazing stuff on a daily basis, and our expectations are really high. But trying to create really great structures for them to do their work, and I think these are opportunities to shine the light on our teachers. These aren't about administration or anybody else. This is really about to highlight our teachers, the work that they're doing on a daily basis, and what they're producing is absolutely impressive. And I'm just pleased, you know, Erica has just done a beautiful job of working with our local press to help tell our story. So I'm really appreciative of that.
Do we get publishing rights to that stuff? Not publishing rights. Are we able to use that information to publish?
Reprint it?
I'll lean over to my experts over here. We got.
So we can share it on.
We can keep sharing it back out.
Individual schools' home site, website.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the U.S. Department of Ed thing, I mean, she's coming in to talk about ESL, right, in particular?
And
public learning, right? I mean, if we could do a reprint of that, like in a handheld something or other, yeah. I think that's just great to have available.
Because more people are going to their own individual school sites versus the DC one, so put it where they're. Put it where they read.
Well, they're going to see it, yeah.
And Erica's just done a nice job of pushing that back out, putting it onto the Facebook, put it on the website, but it's a good piece to rebrand it back onto our school-based websites because that's where a vast majority of our parents go to.
Yeah,
right, next to the Skyward Link. Yeah. That is it. That is it.
All right, great. Board reports. Anybody?
We had a Team 21 meeting last week, and just some quick talking points. We discussed, I think I mentioned this, that we were going to be reading a book, and this is my copy of the book. It's called Disrupting Class, and it was voted on by the teachers before we left in May to decide what book we would read as a group read. And so we started a discussion around this, and I would say the takeaways. There were many. We set aside, I think, 30 minutes, but it ended up going for about 45 minutes because there was a lot of interest. Everybody had read. It was great. And one of the takeaways for teachers is that this word disruption, which I think at face value can sound negative to people to feel disrupted, but the way the book frames this, and then as we talked about it, is really what's the positive force around disruption so that we can see the outcome. In fact, John, your comment to Congressman Roskam when we were at that meeting where you talked about the innovation piece is exactly what this book is talking about. So we have extra copies, maybe we can, if a board member wants to take a look at it, we can get it out and I'll share mine as well. But very good discussion around that, and it really caused a deeper dive on conversation with regard to when we reviewed the ISAC, the math assessments, and our Fontes and Pinnell data. Just like we had at the board, we presented it and did that and had that presentation for the teachers and staff at Team 21. The other thing we did was a park update on the testing, the assessment, and kind of where we are with that, and also the fact that some of the schools had done a test of that, and that it will all be online. And teachers talked a little bit about that and what they're doing to accommodate and kind of adjust for some of that. And then the last thing we talked about was coordination of our work with continuous improvement team that John serves on as a representative and connecting back to that model. So it's kind of Team 21 kind of regenerating itself. I just want to share just very briefly, based on our chapter discussion, then the ISAT review, the question was asked, and people gave some feedback on this, the teachers did, and the question was asked, why the excellent results, as they look through that themselves. And we had a level 3 teacher from one of the schools share this this comment from one of their students, which really supports the work that the teachers have been doing. And so she asked the question of the students at the beginning of the school year, and the question was, why do people read? And at least one, but more than that, I believe she said, answered it this way, to be a better writer. which has been the whole impetus around the workshop format, the way we're, you know, teaching reading, et cetera. So she just shared that day because she just felt like, you know, the light bulb had gone on, and she felt excited that, you know, she had her fourth grader say, yeah, I get it, you know, that's why we read, to do this. So I'll just read a couple of comments from teachers on why the excellent results, and this was just their feedback. Students developmentally are understanding the material and they're more confident with it, and the confidence comes from the longer time spent in District 41. So they're seeing that, you know, we've talked about that before, but they talked about that in terms of matriculation. Classrooms are aligning directly to the standards. Planning is intentional, so back to the work that even we did today. We're having more professional conversations with each other as educators and greater collaboration. Illinois state standards have not been as nearly as aligned as the Common Core, and we're beginning to live and breathe the standards. We understand them, we know them. Teachers are using more different educational methods and strategies, ones that will work for them, and which are more encouraging to individual students. So I just wanted to share that because I think sometimes we don't ask the really baseline questions, and I just thought that was really good feedback. So I just wanted to share that from Team 21. I mentioned it already, but the budget hearings are coming up for ISB, and I'm going to be able to go over to the Naperville one. So I will report back on those and whether or not any of this stuff has come up before or again. And that's it. Thank you.
Terrific. Anybody else?
Quickly from finance for Drew, we spoke about a couple of things: the construction update, the tier one that Lord presented, and the last thing we talked about, and the budget transfer of funds. But also, quickly, Bob is going to bring to the board next week a recommendation for us to basically buy a service insurance plan for our fire equipment, pull handles, smoke alarms, all that other stuff, an investment in insurance. It's getting aged. We asked for a couple things. Back test that insurance would have covered any instances over the past couple of years, as well as the Hadley expense that happened a year or two ago. So pretty
exciting meeting.
Yeah.
We love the money.
You finished on time.
Yes, we did.
30 minutes early.
Anyone else?
Sure. You may already know. I don't know. We have a policy committee meeting set for the 31st, and my understanding is we will be trying to lay out priority in the schedule for the rest of the year as to which policies need to be reviewed this year and others that we want to review. So I think for all of you, if there are policies that, you know, we need to look at, let Dean, me, Paul know, and we'll try to tackle the workload there that's ahead of us this year.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Joe, any? Terrific. Let's see. Upcoming meetings, October 23rd, 2014, Board of Education special meeting, 6 p.m. Central Services Office. On October 27th, 2014, Board of Education special meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services Office. Why are they both?
Yeah,
special?
They're not that special. The October 27th is not special. The October 23rd is the board self-evaluation, where we'll have Barb Tony from Illinois Association of School Boards here to work with the board.
Okay. Just FYI, I may not be able to make that, but I'm trying.
The 23rd?
Yeah. Other matters?
John, is there any way we could know within the next couple of weeks?
You guys should still have a meeting.
No.
We can adjust it.
The board governance review, John, really, you should be there. It's important for you to be there.
And it took forever.
I'm trying to work it right
okay.
now. I'm in another state, but
okay.
Can I call in?
Yeah.
Okay. Other matters? Anybody? Other matters?
I just have a couple of things. Thursday night, Catherine and Paul and I are registered to go to the DuPage Division meeting, the fall meeting for ISB. I am not going to be able to make it because I've taken my son on a college visit and they changed our appointment time to Friday morning. So, and we're going to the University of Pittsburgh. So, can anybody go and use my meal ticket? So, that's open. It's Thursday night. It's just in Naperville.
That's the
Hilton. Yeah, Hilton Lyle. You already have something going on. I know.
Free meal.
It's 5:45, 6:15 is business meeting and then dinner. And actually, the speaker is really good speaker, Maui Azignam, who's the very well-known Wheaton North grad who came from Ethiopia at the age of 3 and ended up at Harvard and just has a great story and has his own learning company now. In fact, Glenbard West is using a modified version of his leadership program for 50 sophomores to start in the leadership track. So anyway, that's available. I'll hand this to you if you can go. I'm sorry I can't make it. I got to get on
the road. No, I got to get on the road.
And then Thursday night, you can't... I can't go again, but Thursday night is the State of the Village address for Glen Ellyn at 7:30, and you know they're going to be talking about the downtown plan and all that stuff. So I'm going to listen to the recording on that. But I did want to also mention, just to get on our radar, and especially you know, it's kind of as we start looking forward, part of the developer proposal that went ahead with the Village Board. Where is this five-story apartment building on the Gishi property, if you've been following that, and, you know, kind of the look of it, we've all had that on our radar. It's going to include 125 apartment units. So I started to think about every time we think about new housing and all that, and what that will mean for schools and impact on schools. So just out of curiosity, I called over to Wheaton, that 121 center, that brand new apartment complex, right near Carlson's, right in the corner there. They have, this is larger, they have 302 apartments. But I called today just out of curiosity to say, what's the use or the mixed use of this? And she said they're 80% rented already. And it's evenly distributed among seniors that she called kind of over 55, single people, and families with children. So in that 80%, they have kind of an even third of those three groupings. So I just think we need to put on our radar as a board and maybe even some conversation with the, you know, with Mark Franz, how that impacts us, you know? Because these things, they happen, they kind of, these things come up and there's conversations and then it's exciting. I mean, we want downtown development, which is great. It also impacts, you know, potentially impacts us.
Without giving us the tax that comes along with the new building, because that's the downtown TIF.
That is TIF, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's
so
tax.
All you're going to get is the impact fee of $1,500 per room, and not the increase in the taxes.
Gishi's is TIF?
Yeah. That downtown area has been TIF.
Mm-hmm.
I think up to that corner.
Yeah, I don't think it's just a question of increased property revenue. I think it's also increased students.
No, my point was that.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's why
you get the increased students, but you don't get the increased
taxes.
That's a funding.
Okay, any other matters?
No, I don't need to follow up.
All right. We have a need to adjourn to closed session. We have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or the representatives or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees.
So moved.
Second. Thank you. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roll call. Motion. Second. Roll call.
Roll it all out.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis? I'm sorry. I'm here. Mr. Chesky?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Blanche?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, thank you for coming, folks. Have a wonderful evening.